I know some are headed on the vacation trips early in the morning, right, John? So we appreciate the people staying for VBS and to help us with things like this. I recently on a Sunday night, in one of our questions that we studied, we used a question from Daniel chapter 3 and verse 26. Are you able? And I told you at the time I wanted to save the companion question to that and plan to do that to do it in our series of our VBS series, and that's where we are. This is actually last night's topic in VBS, but it's current to our need for this day, and all you had to do to see that would be to watch the news this morning. Daniel chapter 6 is the story of the Daniel and the lion's den. We had a whole bunch of lions around here last night, and it looked like most of them survived too today. We had the beginning part where the guys put the word God up on this screen here, and then they chose three volunteers from the kids and lined them up here and asked them to keep their focus on God, that Phil was going to try to distract them and get their attention off on other things and all of that. And it was interesting to watch those kids. One of them, who was special to me, old Phil, he kept his eye on that screen. Old Phil would try to come on. He just turned his back on old Phil and watched the screen up there. And they were talking about being constant in prayer. And I've thought about how hard that basic task really is, at least for me. It may not be for everybody else. But I think we might take a moment to try to renew our thinking about this. After all, what is in practice now, in the connection between the people of God and the ability of God. In practice, what's the practical connection between the people of God and the ability of God? Now, we think about his gift. It may be his providential work in his people through his Spirit. He doesn't allow us to be tempted above what we're able to bear, and he strengthens his children in the inward man with his Spirit. But in practice, in our practice, isn't the connection between the people of God and the ability of God prayer? Aren't I right about that? So you might think about it this way here. What today reminded you of, or did anything remind you to devote yourself to prayer? Doesn't have to be the news, but did anything today remind you to devote yourself to prayer? I have at least three answers in my case: breakfast, lunch, and supper. At least in my house, it's supper, not dinner. But you know, can you name it? This is we'll try to discuss, have some discussion here. That's why I move you together. So say out loud, was there anything that reminded you of the need in your life to devote yourself to prayer? Some of you mentioned family members with health concerns. Traveling was one. Jerry? All right, blessings, just counting blessings that came along, and kind of like Sneaky Pete up here, the need to say thank you. Anybody else?
But then it, because I woke up in a nice cool house and looked out
all right, the simple blessing like the place to live that's cool enough. You can go on with that. The occasion for us to remember, like Romans 12:12 says, to be continuing steadfastly in prayer, to be constant in prayer, is there are reminders all around. Now, that leaves another question. I may have to have some help with the clicker here. Did anything today tend to keep you from being constant in prayer, or beyond just today? What are the challenges here to being constant in prayer? What ones did you run across? I can't take the third question off right now, so think about it. The middle ones, where I am here. What tends to keep us from being constant in prayer? What are the challenges to this, to the discipline of prayer? What, Julie?
Getting wrapped up in everything.
All right, oddly enough, just getting wrapped up in all of the stuff we just said were occasions to remind us to pray the same things are challenges too. What were you going to mention? All right. All right, he keeps us busy, and have you noticed that often when he keeps us busy, he also keeps us thinking it all depends on, either thinking that it all depends on us, or that somebody's supposed to do it for us, and we start evaluating how they do. Anything else that you find to be a challenge?
I think how you feel, you're tired.
All right. Just the process of living and the rhythm of waking and exerting yourself and growing tired and all of that. The demands of people can do so. Nobody mentioned this, but the ready access to all kinds of gadgets can do it. You know, our looking at our phones doesn't just happen when we ought to be looking each other in the eye and talking. It also intrudes into our talking to our Heavenly Father as well. What about just not feeling like you know how? What about feeling like you're at a spiritual low point? Do you go through droughts in the discipline of prayer in your life? And then that leads us to the third thing here. How can the obstacles that we meet where dedication and prayer is concerned be overcome? Give me some ideas what might help us to overcome some of these obstacles. You know, a class, just to remind us of it, might help us to remember the Lord's instruction. Jerry? All right. Pray for help in that way. All right. God's answer to help me to pray might be to give us something that we can't handle without prayer. So, okay, Brennan? All right. All right. Very good. Set yourself a time or times to do that are going to be, you can pray many other times, but in order to keep you from forgetting altogether, have some times when we do that. If anybody else, David? I agree, and I think it might have been related to the former timing even of Jewish practice, but his point is Acts 2:42 does not just say they were devoted to prayer, but they devoted themselves to the prayers. And that would suggest what Brendan talked about here. What about the examples of good people, noble people? I didn't bring it in here with me, but I want to mention to you, I found in one of my files today a note that had been written about Paul's grandma. And Vivian, a lot of you know, was at the heartbeat of this congregation a long time. And then in her later years, she moved to Texas to live with Paul's aunt down there. And when it came time to remember her great life, Lisa gave me a little piece that Lisa had written, in which she told me that she was down in Texas. They went down to Texas to visit Grandma, and they had laid down to rest, and Lisa heard Miss Vivian talking, and she grew concerned and went to see what was wrong, and she thought Grandma was talking in her sleep. And when she got close enough to hear, Sister Vivian was praying for each one of them by name out loud when she had laid down to rest. That sounds like her, doesn't it, Paul? And has that example ever encouraged your family to pray, Paul? It's not just bad things or big needs, but the example of noble people. And in our class tonight, we're looking at one of them. One of the reasons Daniel chapter 6 is in the Bible is for its example to all the Lord's people, for us to remember to praise. Scott, if you're back there, the clicker is not working tonight. So what I've done with Daniel chapter 6 is to try to break it down into sort of six parts, and I'm tempted to take the time to read the whole chapter. Do y'all want me to do that, or are you familiar enough with Daniel chapter 6 that you know the story of Daniel and the lion's den? Just look at it in your Bible for a second, and let me just notice with you how it unfolds. This is in the days when Darius the Mede is the king over the what was Babylon and what's now the Medo-Persian Empire. And then he organizes his realm with an organization like of different levels of officials in order to guarantee that nobody cheats him. And what happens is that Daniel becomes one of the three highest of these officials, and that he's distinguished even above the other two of them. This makes Daniel's, the other officials and the other nobles of King Darius jealous. And so in verses 6 and following, they come up with their scheme to have no prayer by law, no prayer offered to anybody except Darius for a space of 30 days under penalty of the lion's den. They do it because they have not been able to find any complaint against Daniel with regard to the kingdom. That's what verse 4 said. Because Daniel was faithful and no error or fault was found in him. That's verse 4. Now, King Darius signs the document in verse 9 as they have proposed. And here's the heart of the matter. Daniel 6 verses 10 and following. When Daniel knew that the document had been signed, he went to his house where he had windows in his upper chamber open toward Jerusalem. He got down on his knees three times a day and prayed and gave thanks to before his God as he had done previously. Then these men came by agreement and found Daniel making petition and plea before his God. Verses 12 and following, gives them the record of their trip to the king, and they go like they're all alarmed and all of that, and remind him he signed the injunction about being anybody being cast into the lions who's prayed like this. And they point out that Persian law requires that an order like this not be changed, and that then that Daniel is guilty of the terrible wrong of praying three times a day to God back in Jerusalem, they think, the God of the Jewish people. The king hears this, verse 14 and following, and he is very alarmed because this is his most trusted official. And he looks for every way he can to protect Daniel, and finding no way to deliver Daniel by law, we come to verse 16. The king commanded, and Daniel was brought and cast into the den of lions. The king declared to Daniel, "May your God, whom you serve continually, deliver you." And a stone was brought and laid on the mouth of the den, and the king sealed it with his own signet and with the signet of his lords, that nothing might be changed concerning Daniel. Then the king went to his palace and spent the night fasting. No diversions were brought to him, and sleep fled from him. Then at the break of day, the king arose and went in haste to the den of lions. As he came near to the den where Daniel was, he cried out in a tone of anguish. The king declared to Daniel, and this is our verse, "O Daniel, servant of the living God, has your God, whom you serve continually, been able to deliver you from the lions?" Then Daniel said to the king, "O king, live forever. My God sent his angel and shut the lions' mouths, and I have not harmed me because I was found blameless before him and also before you, O king. I have done no harm." The king was glad, and it tells how Daniel is delivered from the lion's den because he trusted it is God. And like the partners of Sneaky Pete up here, these officials who've accused Daniel fall into their own trap and become the lion's breakfasts in verse 24. I ran across this past week an old book that Kay and I gave to her dad for Christmas or something, or his birthday in the first year of our marriage. It was in the box of books that her folks had. And it was an old book, an old Leroy Brownlow book. Grandpa was a preacher. And it says in there that Grandpa said that the lions wouldn't eat Daniel because he was all grit and gristle. And maybe that's right. I'd say also he was a lot faith. Now, think about what happens here, and I want to try to not wonder too much with this, so I'll stick with the way I've outlined it for myself. But this describes the practice of a man who is living in exile. Now, are we in any way like Daniel in that sense? As Christians, are we in any way similar to someone who's living in exile, or as a stranger or a sojourner in a land that's not home? Yes. Yes, 1 Peter is one of those. All you have to do is listen to the news. You can see it. But 1 Peter 1:17, 2:11, we're people who look for a better country. We love the one we're living in, but we know we die here, and sometimes we get sick and we hurt and we have trouble getting along, and all. We look for a better country. So Daniel, if you remember, was taken to Babylon as a captive when he's about 15. And when the events of Daniel 6 occur, He has to have been somewhere around 80 years old. And he obviously, from the beginning of his sojourn in that strange land, he's resolved not to defile himself. Daniel 1 and verse 8 says it. And a big part of that, of his success, is gaining the trust of these pagan kings and so forth, is that he has his windows open toward Jerusalem. If you notice in verse 10, what does that mean? Was he just letting the air flow through? Is that the point of that little detail, that he had his windows open in Jerusalem? What did it mean? What did it mean? It's an indication of his prayers. And what he's doing here, he's doing because it's what the Scriptures taught him. If you look back to 1 Kings 8 in verses 46 through 52, in the dedication prayer of Solomon when the temple is built, Solomon prays to God, if the day ever comes when the people are faithless to you and you have to send them into captivity, and if they get over there in a strange land and they remember their obligation to you, and their heart turns and they repent and they pray toward Jerusalem, then will you please hear them and forgive them and deliver them from their transgressions and bring them back? Daniel is the kind of man who has been dedicated to doing what he read in Scripture about seeking God and about praying to God. And that's the beginning of this little story that we want to bear in mind. In other words, this doesn't happen on a blank slate. There's a long life behind it. All right, next one, Scott, if you're back there. Now, back up, maybe I clicked it too much. Can you? There we go. Thank you. You'll notice next this idea that dedication to prayer has been a settled way of life for Daniel long before the problems described in this chapter come on him. And it's not like sometimes I find myself being, I really, really pray until things go better for a while, and then I kind of, at least I try not to, but that's the human nature of it. And in this case, verse 10 shows that Daniel has a practice which he has done previously. Does everybody see that in verse 10? He has these windows in his upper chamber, meaning he's not trying to be a show to anybody, and they're open toward Jerusalem, and that's his place to be alone with God. Not only a place, but he'd go to his house, the verse says. So his only motive is to draw near to God, and he's doing the kind of thing Jesus taught in what we call going to your closet, in Matthew 6 and verse 6. And he'd get down on his knees. There's not an official posture in the Bible that you have to have for prayer, but what does it generally indicate to you when you read about somebody getting down on his knees?
They were serious.
Serious? Submission? Humility? All right. That he is investing himself in the prayer. That this is fervent, sincere, intense, yes. And he would do this three times a day. Psalm 55 and verse 17 sort of mentions the idea of morning, noon, and evening. And there may be a person or two sitting in this room that takes medicine that way, I don't know. Spiritual medicine is needed too. And then notice it says he prayed and gave thanks before his God. What does it tell you about his prayer life when it says he prayed and gave thanks before God, before his God? His prayers are not just asking. They're also giving. And there is a communing with his God. This is his God that we're talking about here. So let me ask a question now. What do you imagine a practice like this will do to a person's life over 80 years? Or 65, if that's how long he's been in Babylon. What kind of an impact would this sort of a habit have on a person's character, on his heart, on his attitude, his outlook? What do you think it would do to him? All right, he would become a more trusting person. He would learn to put his trust in God, to expect the best, to hope in that way. Anybody? Pardon?
His faith would be strengthened.
His faith would be strengthened. Can you do that long without sort of it bringing you in line with what you're asking for? Do you start acting like you're praying? I think probably it does. All right, take the next step in our little story now. God has made something of Daniel also through his dedication to prayer. And he was still, at the time of these events, blessing Daniel. You think about it this way. There's an excellent spirit in this man. Verse 3 says, in the ESV, which I read here. And he's already one of the three top officers. And as I said, he's distinguished above the others. So he's a respected and trusted leader that Darius is planning to set over his whole kingdom. You read about first there. Can a person live for God in a strange land and still succeed? Yeah, sometimes we suffer hardship and we begin to think that you can't live for the Lord without that. Sometimes God exalts his people to places of influence, and he does that with Daniel in an unlikely situation. So now then, both the king and Daniel's enemies know about Daniel's faithfulness to his God, whom the king says, you serve continually, in verse 20. And the other officials know in verse 5, we're not going to find anything against this man unless we pick at his faith and his devotion to God. I'm not that hard to criticize, are you? Yeah, there can be fault found a lot easier than that. So you think about it this way then. And I think this is a pretty meaningful observation. Real prayer is set within the context of a life which is consistent with those prayers. And honor comes upon life this way. What does God, we read from James 4 the other day in our meeting Sunday morning. What did it say God does with those who humble themselves? Dennis? He lifts them up. He exalts them, right? And in this case with Daniel, that's been shown in an obvious way. And this is a man from a nation that God had humbled totally because of their faithlessness. And now God over time has exalted this man. So we step a little bit closer now to the main part of our account here. This same man now, Daniel's dedication to prayer is not changed by the danger that's posed through the plot of these enemies. Instead, Daniel's dedication to prayer is highlighted. It shines. It's more impressive because he encounters a problem with it. It says that when Daniel knows the document has been signed, He goes right on following the practice of prayer as he has been. Now, how does Daniel do this? When he's in the strange situation and when the prayer that his praying might possibly get him into trouble, how does he proceed? What does he do? What might I learn from it? It says here that he just shows the same attitude toward both God and the king that he always has. Is that not striking if you stop and think about it? These conspirators come by agreement and they find Daniel making his petition before God. But they have to, notice they have to have planned to do it because Daniel did not try to seek out the confrontation with it. He went to his upper room where the windows were open to the east, and he got down on his knees in his house and he prayed. And he was found because he didn't vary his practice one way or the other by what went on. He did it three times a day just like he had before. And the conspirators on purpose find him and then they accuse him to the king. He's paid no attention to you. This sorry, undependable fellow has prayed to his God just like he always does, and the kingdom cannot abide guys like this. So the king is much distressed, as you notice, and he seeks every way he can to let Daniel go, but he's been backed into the corner by these men's cunning use of Persian law. And Daniel is cast into the den of the lions by a king who is throwing him there for praying to some other god but him, who in the process of putting Daniel in the lion's den says, "May your God, whom you serve continually, deliver you." That is a strange execution of the law, isn't it? You may have noticed, and I don't know if any of you have seen any of the museum pieces from the Persian kingdoms or the Assyrian kingdoms before that, but the use of the lions on their inscriptions, their walls, and that kind of thing is a pretty common theme. And it's almost like to me that this being thrown in the lion's den meant the kingdom of the mighty Persians is going to consume you if you are devoted to any deity but us. I kind of think that's what the point of all this was. So you look where Daniel ends up by praying. What would it do to you if you prayed three times a day like you always had, giving thanks and praying? What would it do to you the minute you were grabbed by the collar and thrown into the lion's den? Would you think, thanks a lot of good it does to pray to you? All right, Julie says it would make you, having the background that Daniel has, it would make you pray. That seems logical, doesn't it? I mean, it doesn't make sense that if that's the answer you get, you'd do that, but that does dedication to prayer keep a person from having problems, or does it prepare him to cope with problems when they come? All right, do you agree with her? Is the point of praying to keep from having problems, to have God only give us good things, or is it to prepare us to be able to handle what life brings us?
All right.
And we are going to have, there's going to be thorns All right. All right, Jerry, what were you going to say?
I think both.
Jerry says both. I think that's a good answer. God does give good gifts. What position was Daniel in when this happened to him? He was about to be the first over the kingdom. God had been blessing him all along. And then when he met a problem, he was also able to cope with the problem. So both. I think, though, that he hasn't just prayed just to avoid problems. He's prayed in every situation. So that's a part of it. Now, a little step farther here. Daniel's dedication to prayer is not changed, as you know. He finds himself here. He finds himself now completely in the care of the God to whom he has long prayed and given thanks. And I just said, what would you say the minute you got thrown into the lions' den? One interesting thing about this, there's not a word recorded about anything Daniel said or did from the time the den is closed to the time the king calls out to him the next morning. I take it that he's been basically a man at peace. We know more about the distress of the king and the ones outside the lion's den than we know of any fear on the part of the man in it. Isn't that weird? And the king cries, O Daniel, servant of the living God, has your God, whom you serve continually, been able to deliver you from the lions? Can you think of the old king listening? How dumb. I want you to think about this. How dumb would he have looked through all of his officers and nobles in the kingdom who had engineered the plot to have Daniel fall? For the king to go out there the next morning and to talk, to expect an answer from the man he had thrown to the lions for supper. Have you thought about that? And Daniel says he says, my God has sent his angel and shut the lions' mouths, and they've not harmed me because I was found blameless before them, and also before you, O king, I've done no harm. Verse 23 says that there's a reason why Daniel was delivered. What is it? Because he trusted in his God. Was Daniel delivered because of his trust or because of God's ability? Both. But which one really closed the mouth of the lions? God's ability did, right? And so Daniel's dedication to prayer hasn't kept him from ever being in the lion's den, but it has kept him when he was in the lion's den. And what I would liken it to most, the fellowship that I'd liken it to most, I think, is with Jesus in Gethsemane. Luke 22, when Jesus falls on his knees and prays, if it's possible, to let the cup pass from him, and nevertheless, not my will, but yours be done. What happened? All right, God was glorified, God was glorified by God sending an angel to strengthen Jesus, not by to avoid the cross, but to endure it. Yes.
There's a song that Lauren Daigle sings that says, "I wish you'd move the mountain. I wish you'd part the waters, and I reach out and call to you, and you don't answer."
Yeah.
But I will trust in you.
I believe you can. And I know you're able, but I'll trust in you. And that, I think that's exactly what Daniel does. And then this one last step here. And Daniel's dedication to prayer ends up allowing the name of the God to whom he prays to be continually glorified, as he just mentioned. His enemies meet the judgment of their own injustice in verse 24. The king decrees that his people are to fear and tremble before the living God, who is also the God whom Daniel serves, in verses 26 and 27. And this man Daniel continues to prosper. Now, just for a moment, these questions to conclude our class tonight. First one. One more click, if you can, Scott, back there for me. All right. Which of the obstacles to dedication and prayer that Daniel overcame would have been the hardest one for you to overcome? You want me to mention some of the obstacles? Strange land, long time, big enemies, dangerous law, possible penalty awaiting, no need to push things too far. God can still take care of me if I don't pray out loud to him just for a few days. 30 days is all that he's asking, and after that I can get back to my habit. Which one would have been the hardest? Andy? All right. While your responsibilities are growing and growing, and you're getting older and older and all of that, and Andy's getting real old right now. So, anybody else? Brendan? All right. All right. Right. I agree. Things are going good. It'd be easy to rationalize this. I can compromise for just a month, and it won't hurt me. I can get right back to my habit. All right. That would have been hard. Who else? David? Yes. All right, I'm so glad you mentioned that. What you think about this? Why, Daniel? Other people are praying too. Just pray to a different God for a while. Why be so judgmental? Who do you think you are? Are you that much better than everybody else? Just pray to one of these other gods. That's still a big challenge, isn't it? And that would be one of the things. All right, next one. What misconception about the practice of prayer do you think this event in Daniel's life corrects the most? Which misconception of prayer?
I think that you only pray when things are bad.
All right. One would be the idea that you only pray when things are real bad. All right. Anybody else? That gets pretty bad here when the pressure is put on his faith like that. But he's done so well so long. What else?
God can quit listening.
All right, that God quits listening. When you don't get what you asked for right then, or when you've prayed and you get a problem because of it, then that means God hadn't heard your prayer. Or God quit listening. Anybody else? Larry?
God is a faith builder. He's not a sandbox.
All right, the idea that God hearing prayers means that he only means he gives you what you ask for. You pray to God as a father, and God is, Larry, as Larry put it, God is a faith builder. So he will, his purpose is to make us holy. And he the gifts that he gives in that way may not be the ones we anticipated. That might be part of it. Anybody else? The idea that God that there are situations, this was implied in the king's question, where it's a question about whether God will be able. That God won't be able to sustain his people or to help his people through what happens. How much does the New Testament say God is able to do? Hint, hint. Ephesians chapter 3, verses 20 and 21. God is able to do exceeding abundantly above all that we ask or think. So it's not a question about what he's able to do then. It's what's best. And then one last thing here, and we'll quit. John, you get us one verse of a song, if you will. Here we go. One of the church's goals is to show ourselves to be of the same spirit as Daniel by confessing our belief in the ability of God, like Daniel did. Abiding in Jesus, well, apart from him, we can do nothing. If we love him, we want to do what he says. If we ask in his name, he can bless us. That's John 15, verses 6, 10, and 16. Yes. Yes.
There's not much of that around.
Yeah.
If you turn on the news, it's hard to find it.
Boy, that's the truth, isn't it?
Bill, it seems to me like is I need to remind myself who I am.
Yeah.
And who he is.
Yes. The verse the kids had tonight is a part of the phrases from 1 Peter 3 and verse 8, if you want to look it up and think about it. And you're right, the humility along with this, humbling oneself simply means calling on the Lord in that way. So Romans 12:12, be constant in prayer. And we take that from our VBS. And by the way, these do go together if you think about it. If we obey God, we begin to bear fruit from God. That requires us to pray, and praying requires us to have a feeling for the needs of other people. They kind of go together in that way. John's going to, any other announcement that needed to be made tonight? Y'all been a good class. Appreciate it very much. And we even did it without having our bandanas on. Carrie wants me to wear my chaps Sunday, so you can come and see if I actually do that or not, if you're in doubt. I won't ride tornado, I promise that. Thank you for being with us tonight, John, if you would. And then we'll have a prayer at the conclusion of this. Cambry, you're close there. Do you mind to come and lead the prayer at the end for us? Okay.